Welcome to the Special Ed Strategist, where your special education questions meet expert answers. I'm your host, Wendy Taylor, a certified educational therapist, special educator, and your go-to special ed strategist, here to collaborate with families to access special education services, ignite student potential, and erase learning gaps. Together, we'll unlock the services and support your kiddos' needs to thrive. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Learning Essentials and our Cracking the Code to Special Education Eligibility course. Empower your advocacy, erase confusion, and unlock the services your kiddo deserves. Learn more at learningessentialsedu.com. Hello and welcome to the Special Ed Strategist. I am excited to talk today with Dr. Greenwood. I'm going to have him do his introduction for you guys, but really talking about this idea and concept of holistic career counseling to help guide your kiddos to the next stage of their life. So welcome, Dr. Greenwood. Thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure. So I'm Dr. Dan Greenwood. I've been in career counseling for 10 years as CEO of Greenwood Systems. Greenwood Associates has been around for more than 30 years, developed by Dr. Janet Greenwood, my mother, who in 2008 came up with the Greenwood System, which is the holistic career counseling process that we're going to be talking about today.
Excellent. Before we dive in, I always ask my guests, what is a little known fun fact about you that is not necessarily related to the career that you're in currently?
I guess the other things that are going on in my life right now are that I'm proud grandfather of two. So moved into that phase of being a grandfather and traveling around and seeing the kids and watching my kids grow up and become parents themselves. So that's a very exciting time in my life.
That is awesome. So I do have to ask you, because I'm always wondering, I am nowhere near, I hope, my children. They're still young, so not ready to be a grandmother yet. But what is your grandparent name?
So I only have one who's able to, and he's 2.5, and I'm Grandpa.
Okay, there we go. I'm always interested in.
Grandpa didn't quite make it, so Grandpa is good, which, you know, works well for me because I do enjoy that Italian after-dinner liqueur, so I'm enjoying being Grandpa.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so wind our way back to our conversation. Can you explain what holistic career counseling entails, and like, how is that different than somebody seeking career counseling?
Yeah, so holistic career counseling really involves evaluating four domains of a person's profile. And those are abilities, interests, values, and personality. And this has been born of 100 years of career counseling evolution, starting way back in the 1800s with Frank Parson, who started off with the abilities testing. He had what's called traits and factors. So he was very much interested in what are you good at? What does the job need to do? And then you would match those two up with an expert and put it down on paper. In 1943, Myers-Briggs came out with the, you know, operationalizing Jungian theory. That was personality. And there was some understanding that personality had an impact on what you might be good at or what careers might be a good fit for you. 1966, John Holland came out with the Holland Code, which really was a watershed breakthrough, which is heavily used within the career counseling practice because it really is far more nuanced and does a really good job of classifying jobs and people. And then you're able to match people and jobs through what's called personality environment fit. And then in 1996, Super and Savickas came out with the idea that the values really matter. So in 2008, Dr. Janet Greenwood synthesized these into this holistic career counseling assessment. And then the process, best practice career counseling process, is that you first have the students think about who they are and what's called a self-exploration, identify who they want to become, and then you have the career exploration where they learn about careers for which they are well-matched. They evaluate those careers in with what they think their values are, and then you narrow them down, and then you build an action plan for them. So you first have them think about who they are, look at what they can do, and then you help them plan for a future to learn more about those things which they have identified through their values to be good matches for them.
I'm curious, has there been any research that has tracked the difference between someone going through this process, the holistic process, versus just you're good at, you have the capabilities of doing X job, that's what you're going to do?
Yeah. Well, I can say that the Greenwood system in 2008 was put under the microscope in a peer-reviewed journal article, and it was found to be 85% effective with a 95% approval rating. So 85% of the people were either doing the job or were supposed to be doing the job, but they were between jobs or raising kids or something. The research on it is very strong that if you take all these factors into account and work with someone who is good at doing this work, it can have a huge impact. So I can tell you that. Now, the non-holistic are the when you just take an abilities test. Johnson O'Connor and YouScience are very abilities focused. And that's one way to do it. And then you've got the interest only, which is kind of like the strong and the self-directed search, which are really only asking about your interests. And the Myers-Briggs is a personality test. So there are some career counselors or some people who use individualized assessments to help them decide what they might do. But we have found that it's much more effective to take all of those things into account. And the nice thing is that we've taken all of those and put them into a single assessment. So our GS120 assessment actually has the Myers-Briggs results embedded within the algorithm that uses to match the jobs to the profile that's developed, looking at their abilities, interests, values, and personality.
So let's dive deeper into all of the elements that you've shared. How does self-exploration help individuals better understand their strengths and their preferences during this process?
So the self-exploration is possibly one of the most overlooked but important things to do in a career counseling process. Because what you're looking to help them do is to identify exactly who they want to be and what they prioritize so that they can then make decisions about careers based on who they want to be in the future. And so you want to engage them in questions like, what have they done in the past and where might they want to live? And you're asking more general questions and helping them come up with a set of sentences that they can articulate that if they look at it, then they will be very, very confident that they would be happy if that were true. So you're just helping them really project themselves, think about their values, prioritize their values. Think about who they want to be, and then you're able to help them look at jobs with that in mind. You're able to compare those jobs with those sentences which they said that they wanted.
And then how would we lead that? Because many 17 and 18 year olds, as they're doing this transition or, thinking about, say, they're thinking about post-secondary or thinking about college and they're thinking, all right, what should I major in so that I can start to line everything up? Or if I'm going to trade school, how do we get to the point where they're able to say, all right, here's my purpose and passion? Sometimes we don't have adults that are able to do that.
Yeah, it's not something that we do a lot of self-reflection. We ask the end question, who do you want to be when you grow up? Or what, or not even who, what do you want to be? And we're not asking who they want to be. That has negative consequences for some people who find themselves 20 years down the road and not really feeling like they're connected to their job. And that's what we're hoping to avoid by having them do this kind of soul searching and prioritization. And it really is a matter of asking them little questions that build up to a sum of a whole. Rather than asking them what the whole is, you're asking them, hey, prioritize these career values, prioritize these personal values. Tell me what motivates you. Pick from a list of motivators. And so then by asking those little questions, they're able to build their identity rather than asking them to articulate it from day one. And in high school, they are having to make decisions. And I frequently get asked the questions, but they're not a fully formed human being yet. How can they do this? Well, the fact is they've got to make decisions, from that point forward. So why not start with the best information possible? And we know from child development that their 17-year-old selves are going to be a lot more like their 35-year-old selves than not. There will obviously be changes in priorities as they, grow up and evolve, but Hopefully their interests are going to pretty much be the same. And so you're really asking them, okay, let's find out what you're interested in and let's turn that interest into a passion. And if you can do that, then that passion will give them purpose. And that's what you're hoping to do is help the students find a job for which they are passionate and feel like they are contributing and it's their purpose. Those people show up to work and they're gritty and they are, very able to overcome obstacles, as opposed to those who feel like they're punching a clock and white knuckling it till retirement.
How does this align for students with neurodiversity?
So what we have or what we encourage is for there to be a understanding of the exceptionalities. So with a neurotypical population, the exceptionalities may not be so pronounced. And so you do need to have some understanding of and appreciation for what's required in each job. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics has incredibly detailed information about every job that they have in their database. They have 199 dimensions of every job. Everything from the physical capabilities, what's your trunk strength and your coordination to your eyesight. There's sensitivities to glare and noise in there. There's work contexts, whether you're standing or sitting, or whether you're on a computer or talking to people or dealing with aggressive and angry people. There's social capabilities. Are you able to understand why people react the way that they do? Are you able to negotiate? So there's an enormous amount of information out there. And those of us who are working with the neurodiverse population have access to that data and leverage that data when thinking about jobs and trying to take those things for which they are exceptionally strong and leverage those. And then minimize those things for which they struggle. So that's what you do as a career counselor dealing with a neurodiverse population.
So thinking about the career assessments and tools that you mentioned, like the Holland Code or MBTI, those tend to be pretty popular. How do these assessments complement that holistic approach when you're trying to guide individuals towards that career path that align with their values and personalities?
You know, what's fun about the MBTI and the Holland Code is that when the kids take or students take them or clients take them, they usually see themselves in the results. And sometimes they think that they're unique or strange or there's no one like them. And then they take one of these and they're like, oh, well, you're this. And they're like, oh my gosh, yes, I am. And so that's always fun to see that, while they might think that they're so different that there is a way that you can, describe them. And in the Myers-Briggs is pretty good for career counseling. The problem there is you're only dealing with four letters and 16 different personalities. And really, when you're talking about career counseling, you're looking at the middle two letters, what we call the heart of type, because those are the things that most impact the job. Whereas the Holland Code has six letters, producing 720 possibilities of personality. And so, and then the Holland Code really is fantastic in that it has been adopted by the federal government, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and ONET to classify every job in their database too. It's a more nuanced and accurate way of making matches, but the Holland or the Myers-Briggs is definitely fun and has a lot to share, has a lot to tell the students about themselves. And it also helps them understand how they might react within an organization and how they might approach problems. And it helps them kind of understand that they're going to approach things differently than someone else with a different set of letters.
And as a parent listening to this, we probably should have led with this information, but when should a parent start to encourage this of their student to kind of start the planning and start thinking about what's coming next and this whole approach to that?
So what we know from Ginsberg's child development theory is that prior to the age of 14, they're still in sort of a fantasy. It's more of an expression of their ego, and that after the age of 14, they begin to solidify and make decisions based more on self-knowledge and begin to match things up. And so we prior to the our assessment isn't valid below the age of 14, because and we don't encourage anyone to be doing career assessments beyond below the age of 14, because they're not pedagogically appropriate to be evaluated in that way. So you are really more about exposure. So below the age of 14, you want them to do everything. You want them to be in the play and be on a team and join the robotics team and be on debate. And as much as you can talk about what you do, either to them or with them present, that also helps them understand the world of work. And when your friends come over, encouraging them to ask your friends questions about what they do, all of this is exposure, and it becomes fodder for them to be able to make more informed decisions in the future. So prior to 14, it's about exposure and just trying everything. After that, it begins to, solidify. And at that point, you begin to have opportunities like internships or shadowing opportunities, or, which APs to take or which things to do in the summer. And so what you're hoping to do is take those interests and cultivate them and see if that really takes. Ideally, they would, find something that they would be interested in. They'd get a few internships maybe, or take some coursework, or when they have an opportunity to do a project in class, they would be able to do that and learn more. Just gives them a little bit of focus. And then when applying to college, if they've got all this experience, they're more likely to be successful, because colleges want, the students to know what they want to do. I mean, they do take undecideds, but, programs really want their kids to not necessarily change, majors 5 times. So that kind of helps them. So that's kind of the progression that we're looking for. So we really like 15 and above. So second semester sophomores is when you can start doing that self-exploration and then that career exploration. We feel like that's a good time based on what we know about the research.
How do you guide students that may come to you and say, I'm an avid soccer player. I love soccer player. I love being a soccer player. I'm going pro. There's no other careers for me. This is it. And they may or may not have that ability. But how do you guide the conversation of let's look at this holistically? Let's look at your purpose, your passion. I get that you're passionate about soccer, but how do you kind of take that out? I know parents that are listening think they've heard this from some of either their personal students or students that they support.
We actually have worked with, semi-pro athletes who, and we don't discourage that. We're like, that's great. You keep on that path. You've got a dream. We want you to be that, realize that dream. But let's figure out what might be an alternative to that. Were that not to work out, or, athletes don't, they don't play, their whole lives. So let's make sure that we've got something that, you're working on, so that at the end of your, athletic career, your professional athletic career, you have something that you would like to do that you're going to be happy doing for, after, a short period of time where you're able to play at that level. I guess the other one that we run into, and we were in LA for 17 years, so we had a lot of people who wanted to be actresses and actors, and and that was great. And we, that was the top of their list. But what we explained to them was that then they are a small business, that they have to invest in themselves, that they have to fund this lifestyle in anticipation of the big break. They need to have a career for which they are able to continue to take acting lessons and to go to auditions. And so we were thinking very much about that. And we were also, trying to get them close to it. So maybe catering. So, catering the sets, or doing the electrical or the set design, or there's a whole industry around that. Let's figure out what place you would have in that if you weren't in front of the camera. What can you do behind the camera so that you're close to it, you're aware of it, but you're still having a good time. You're still building on things that you like to do. So it takes a little bit of sales to say, I get it. Let's continue to work down that path, but let's also figure out a way that we can have you live that life and feel like you're still enjoying what you're doing and maybe even passionate about it.
It's incredibly important that you are exposing students to kind of the tiers of jobs under that one heading, as you so nicely just explained. I know just for our personal children, we've kind of just talked about affording the lifestyle, finding a job that can afford the lifestyle that you want and having those conversations. But to then say, all right, I see that you really like, you have a passion about acting or sports or whatever, but what are some other opportunities within that passion that could still pay the bills at the end of the day, because we still have to be in our society and our world and living and eating and all of those good things. So, how does career exploration help kind of that accessibility and realistic part? Is there any other elements to think about when we're thinking about, is this accessible for those students, or the student is thinking about it for themselves, I should say, and is it realistic?
Yeah, the career exploration is something that has been really made much simpler by the internet. When my mother was doing this work years ago, I remember she had bookshelves, with books, and she would, run over and grab a book and, and have the kids look at different jobs and read about them through books. But now, Career One Stop is an excellent source of information about jobs. They are, again, a government-funded institution that has created 18 cluster videos, which are about 3.5 minutes long. And the clusters are things like education and training, finance, architecture and construction, health sciences. So you can watch these 3.5 minute videos. And the beauty of a video is you can see people, what they're wearing, what they're doing. You can kind of envision yourself. It's more visual, as well as it's talking about the different opportunities within those clusters, the education that is required in those clusters. And it even talks about what kind of growth and job outlooks are there in those clusters. So those cluster videos are very nice. And then for each job, for most of them, they have a 90-second video that again goes into more detail about each specific job. So again, you're seeing people doing that job, and it's talking about what a typical day is like and what education is required, and you just really get a good sense. So Career One Stop is an excellent place, and we send our students there to do the research. And then O-Net is a database. Well, Career One Stop also has a lot of the same information about salary and educational requirements and what we call the KSAs, the knowledge, skills, and abilities required for that job. So through that, you help you, the students can get a decent sense of how much money they can make, what kind of education would be required, what a typical day might look like. So that's good exposure. Once you narrow it down to the top couple, then you're really having them dive deeper by going and talking to people who are in the job. What we do, informational interviews. We're trying to hook them up with some education, maybe taking a class or a training in that field so that they can look around and first of all see if they like the content, if they like what they're doing, and do they enjoy the people that they're in the class with? Because those are going to be their future colleagues. And then getting experience, going out and getting internships and shadowing and volunteering. So that's a deeper level of career exploration, but you can get that first level of career exploration through Career One Stop and through O-Net. And then YouTube is great too. I mean, you type in day in the life of a and just stick it in there, and somebody has carried around a camera all day and talks about their job. They frequently like wake up in the morning. It's like there's a genre of them, and you see them brushing their teeth. It's like, okay, it's fast forward, but eventually you see them and what they're doing, and they're talking about, their job and what they like about it. And so, yeah. It's really a wonderful time of information because the internet has made so much information available that it's easier to do career exploration than it ever has been before.
Absolutely, 100%. Absolutely. I talk about that in terms of when I was growing up, it was just kind of like you have these clusters of ideas and this is what you can do. And there was no opportunity to kind of dig deeper into different options and what's out there. And then I love to the day of the life. So you can actually see, do I love this? I know I thought I wanted to be an elementary school teacher, and the first class that they put me in college, they had me go observe a pre-kindergarten and kindergarten split for the day. And I got back on the little bus and went straight to the registrar's office and changed to secondary ed because I just in that moment thought, all right, this isn't where my passion lies. I do now love and enjoy working with our younger friends, but just when I was in my early 20s, I didn't feel like that was the direction. So I think seeing that can really help kind of shape and mold and guide. You talked about abilities, interests, values, and personalities. So how is it important? Do you prioritize one over the other when you start? You know, how is it important for individuals to identify their core values early in the process, or is it just kind of all done simultaneously?
It is all done simultaneously, but if you were to, they're all important. Now, the one that we attend to more with a certain population and then attend to less with the more typical population is the abilities. We are very much of the Carol Dweck mindset that, you can get better at something if you want to, and it's not innate ability, it's effort. So we don't want to take a student who may be struggling in algebra in 10th grade and say, oh, you can't be an engineer, because they just may need a little more time to get good at engineering or, at math. So that's in our assessment. We don't do any kind of abilities testing. We don't give them math problems or solving, or correcting sentences or anything like that. We're just asking what aspirationally they're interested in. Do they want to just graduate high school and get a job? We'll be looking at certificates, which is great. Do they want an associate's degree or a bachelor's or a master's? So we're calibrating, our assessment based on their educational attainment, less than their actual abilities at the time of the assessment. Now, as I mentioned before, the exceptionalities companion report that we have, we are looking, we're using educational testing to see if there are significant areas that we need to attend to factor into the equation of what might be appropriate. But that's of those four domains. Abilities is the one that we're probably not as much interested in, except for in exceptional cases. Whereas personality, well, values is the big one that we really kind of hone in on, because the values are what's going to make you happy in the future. And your abilities, we feel like, are flexible more so than your values. You can get better at something if you try.
Once we have kind of shaken out this information, what would be our next step? Like, how would one create an action plan? You know, once somebody has identified a potential career path, you know, what steps should be involved in creating those actionable plans to help move that student forward?
Yeah, so with an action plan, there is a template. And it's basically the whole goal of it is to have them learn more about it, to just be more familiar with it rather than watching a video. So, as I think I mentioned before, you've got the informational interviews. They should go out and talk to the people who are doing that job and ask them, how did they get into it? What do they like about it? How could you get into it if you were able to? What kind of things do you need to be good at? And just really talk to as many people as possible. You don't want a singular opinion, because you might bump into somebody who's not really happy with what they're doing, and that could be problematic. So talking to people in that industry. Now, informational interviews are tricky, because you don't want to ask for a job. This, when you call up and you ask for an informational interview, the person at the other end is really thinking they're going to share information, and it's not going to be a backdoor for an interview for a job. So it could be that, you're asking them, how can I get involved? Or, what did you do to start off? And they might suggest things, but you're really going in with the sole purpose of finding out their experience and using that information to inform yourself. So informational interviews. And then, with the coursework and everything, the training and education required, you might start doing that. So you might take a course at the college level or take a training at, at the technical college, and you might try these things. But one of the things that we have found that's been an incredible resource is massive online open courses, what we call MOOCs. What are called MOOCs? And MOOCs are free and they're high quality, and you can find college course in almost anything that, when you're done with a student, they can set up an account on edX.org and they can enroll in a self-paced course taught by somebody at MIT or Harvard and actually watch the lectures. And they don't have to take the course. For $50 or $150, you can get a certificate if you do all the exercises and you finish the course. But I'm not even recommending that. I'm just saying, go watch the lectures. Go from lecture to lecture to lecture. Do you like what they're talking about? Does this seem interesting? Do you think about it later in the day? Does it occupy you to think, oh, that's really interesting? Or are they talking about something for which you have no interest? But this is a really quick and easy free way to go out and get high quality education and not have to sign up for a course, go to the local community college, wait for that course to start, and then be there, once or twice a week in person. So MOOCs, I can't promote them enough. And
And what
then
it stands for again? Massive online course.
massive online open courses.
Open courses. There you
Open
go.
courses. Yeah. And then lastly, that experience, volunteer, internships, shadowing, actually breathing the same air as the people for whom you want to be and seeing what their life is like and how they treat each other. And, we as humans take in so much information in so many different ways that I want to expose the kids to as much information as I can, both culturally and academically and physically about the job so that they can feel what it's like to be in a law office or out on a construction site or in a hospital as a volunteer. So that's how you help them truly identify, is by having them learn more and get some experience. And we end with three, and we encourage them to pursue those three, and it quickly whittles itself down to one based on the things that they experience in the informational interviews and the volunteering and so forth.
Do you have any recommendations or tips for families that are listening in terms of how to secure an informational interview or volunteer or internships?
That's a really good question. So, one of the little known sources of great information about every career is the associations, the national associations, the state associations. So if you want to know more about actuary sciences, there is an organization. And these organizations are designed to promote their industries. And one of the ways they promote their industries is through outreach to students. So a lot of these websites that are association websites have a whole section for students, and they list the internships and they, have the opportunities. And the people in those organizations are more willing to have conversations. So if none of your friends, if you don't know any actuaries, you could go to the organization and write an email to the head of the organization and say, hey, I'm interested in this. Is there anyone that can talk to me about it? And they will help you connect if they don't answer the question themselves. So those are good sources if you don't have family, friends, or other acquaintances that you can lean on to find out more about any particular industry.
So what role do you see parents play in holistic career counseling?
Yeah, parents obviously play an enormous role in their kids' lives. I was for a long time a middle school head, and so I was always counseling my parents to transition what I called them as the manager of their kid. So in lower school, you are the manager. You set their schedule, you check their homework, you drive them everywhere. You have a lot of control over their lives, and that is appropriate. What I told my middle school parents was, your job in the next 7 years between sixth grade and 12th grade is to transition from that managerial role to a consultant and have your student be making decisions that they can be proud of and overcome obstacles themselves with you as a consulting person that can help them by, you know, giving them advice. Now, this is not a straight line. It's not like one day you're the manager and the next day you're the consultant. You're constantly looking for opportunities to give your student or your child more power over their lives, more control over their decisions. That is really your role, is to help them make those decisions. And they're not all going to be great. And there's going to be times you're acting as a consultant and then you need to jump back in as a manager. You know, the grades go down because they're watching, you know, they're playing video games all night. Well, that's got to stop, you know. So, you know, it's back and forth. It's back and forth. But ultimately, you want to have your students have a lot of experiences. So as I talked about earlier, you want to encourage them to go try everything. And sometimes, you know, I think parents make the mistake of thinking, well, that's going to get in the way of their academics. Well, this is really important too. The exposure is really important. And, you know, I also used to have the parents who said, well, we want to make sure after, you know, the academics are settled down and we've got that under control, then they can think about joining clubs. And I think that's backwards. I think that they need to join the clubs at the same time. And they need, you know, because the other thing, logistically, it doesn't work out. Halfway through, you're not going to join clubs in Christmas time, you know, after you've figured out whether the academics are, you know, in order or not. So encourage them to have experiences in addition to their academics, making sure that, you know, everything is in order. I'm not suggesting that they become overscheduled, but more experiences they have, the better. And then you are helping them take more control, explore more of their interests, and you are there as guardrails to make sure things don't go off the rails, but you are more and more stepping back and allowing them more control so that when they are done with high school, they have the confidence to make good decisions about things that they should be doing. And your role as a consultant never ends. I mean, you know, it's not as though, you know, once they're launched, you're done. It's just that you're trying to give them as much control as is appropriate and they can handle and they do well. And the more decisions they make, the more confident they're going to be in decisions they're going to make in the future. And that's what makes a healthy, happy, self-confident, independent adult.
Let's shift just a little bit. You had mentioned AI in the beginning. So with the integration of AI tools and career counseling, how has technology enhanced the support to provide individuals with career counseling?
Yeah, so AI, and we have been working with AI, we've developed an app, and the ways in which we have found AI to be extremely helpful in career counseling is in that self-exploration, it can do a really good job of taking a lot of information about you and synthesizing and giving you a first draft of maybe those purpose and passion statements. So, you know, you can have conversations with ChatGPT and you can ask it questions and it can ask you questions and it can build a profile. So that has been extremely helpful. We've used it in that capacity. The other thing it does really well is it can answer questions about careers very well. We've been using it now for a couple months, and with 4.0, ChatGPT 4.0, I've not run into an answer that I disagreed with. When we started, we were using 3.5, and I found maybe 15% of the answers were requiring a little bit of, you know, massaging. But 4.0, you can ask it, hey, would I have time for family as a lawyer? And it will come back with a very, you know, it's possible, but it could be problematic because, you know, the industry culture is such that you work really hard. So there are part-time lawyers, but, you know, that's not the norm. So it gives very balanced and good answers. So through that career exploration, we've actually built it into the career exploration tool so that you can ask it, hey, how does this match with my value? And how does this match with my value? How does this career? And just look at it in general. Where is a good match and where might it be a problematic match. So it is very good at answering questions, and so we have leveraged it and been very pleased with how it works.
A final question to kind of wrap this up. How do parents start the process of finding a career counselor or guiding their student to getting the support they need for the next stage of life? What recommendations do you have?
Well, this is a service that we do provide, and we also have trained a lot of other counselors across the country. And if you go to our website, you can find counselors across the country who have been trained, and we work with them on each of their cases at greenwindsystem.com. And so that is one way. And then there are free resources out there, 16personalities.com.org or com, I can't remember which. That will give you a Myers-Briggs. If you go to onet.org, you will be able to take an interest inventory. There are some card sorts that you can buy, like little decks of cards that you can use to help your student kind of begin to think about what is their priorities. And then I think with the abilities, one of the things that I frequently counsel my clients to do is, and I put it in their action plans, is to continue with the supports, because frequently with these transitions, there is a transition and then there's like supports are not carried forward. So if they had a tutor in high school and they're going to community college, please continue with that tutor. If they had accommodations in high school, please seek out those offices and at the collegiate level that will allow them to continue with those accommodations. There is sometimes this idea, well, no, I'm done with that. Now I'm moving on. And that's not a good way to think of it. You figured out what they need. They've been successful with those supports in place. Please don't let those supports drop just because there's been a transition. So those are the things I would say, that there are counselors out there who can help with this process. There are some free resources out there that you can take advantage of. And I mentioned ONET and Career One Stop are great places for exploration of careers. And then moving forward, just make sure that you're continuing to use those same supports that made them successful up to this point.
Terrific advice. Terrific advice. One final question. If you had a billboard for parents with a tip, what would it be and why?
I have always said that it's almost impossible to fail as a parent if what you are doing is out of love, because the kids can feel that you are doing it because of love. And so you can make a lot of mistakes, but you will be forgiven if you're doing it for the right reasons. And, we as humans are really keen on being able to pick up on motivation. So love your kids, do what you think is best for them. And if it's not the right thing, they'll forgive you in the future. Don't worry about it.
Excellent, excellent advice. And what a tremendous amount of information that you shared. The websites that you provided, I'll go ahead and put those in the show notes as well. And so folks can reach out to you. Thank you very much for your time. This was really helpful and will help guide families in the future. So I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Wendy. It was really a pleasure speaking with you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Special Ed Strategist. Remember, the right support can make all the difference. As your dedicated Special Ed Strategist, I'm here to guide, collaborate, and empower your kiddos' success. Keep igniting potential one step at a time. Until next time, take care and keep strategizing. Today's episode is brought to you by Learning Essentials and our Cracking the Code to Special Education Eligibility course. Empower your advocacy, erase confusion, and unlock the services your kiddo deserves. Learn more at learningessentialsedu.com.